Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome to episode 305 of Amazing Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. My name is Brian Salvatore, and I am joined tonight by, I think I'm going to start calling you guys officially the Chris Voltron, because when Chris can't be here, I assemble you two to take his place, and that is Rob Wolf and Allison McCaig, two of our finest Amazing Avenue contributors, and two people I really like talking about Mets stuff with. So, welcome, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Allison. Hi, everyone.
So, we are recording this on the 18th of December, 2018, and today the Mets officially announced Wilson Ramos as their catcher, their starting catcher for 2018. Ramos got a two-year, $19 million contract with a team option for the third year for, I believe it was $6 million. $6 or $7 million. It's seven.
I think
okay.
It's seven.
Obviously, this is all dependent on health for Ramos. But sort of in a nutshell, this is a good signing, right?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I support it wholeheartedly. I was very much on the Grandal train. Let's focus on the most important thing about this signing, which is that the Real Muto rumor train is over. And I couldn't be happier about that, because that is the biggest positive of this signing, is that we didn't give up Brandon Nimmo, Michael Conforto, Noah Syndergaard, or Ahmed Rosario for JT Realmuto, which is the most important thing. That said, I was kind of on the Grandal train, because I felt like he was the best available free agent catcher. But given the super cheap contract that we were able to get, like, the second best option available on, I am fully on board.
Yeah, I'm the two things that crossed my mind were delighted and relieved. Not to relitigate, it's probably been covered a ton. I was not as sold on the first trade. The Diaz trade, I thought we gave up a little too much. So, yeah, all of those rumors about Realmuto, like, in my mind, I was just like, we're going to do this. Like, we're really going to do this. Like, why, you know, I was fully prepared to just be like, someone call me when Brody gets fired, because I don't know if I can do this. Just hearing those names get thrown out, Syndergaard, Nimmo, Conforto, I was, like, panicked, and whatever, that's silly, it's, but anyway, I kind of agree with you, Allison. There's a small part of me that's like, if Grandal signs for like 3 and 36 or 39, I'll be like, ooh, like, me, you know, we didn't do the absolute best thing. But, you know, Ramos, with the contract he got, seems incredibly reasonable. If Grandal does get more, what, like, he's been crowdsourced at the 4 years, $60 million or some or more, then I actually think this is an incredible bargain signing. And, you know, obviously, you always wince a little at bargain signing in the Mets, but it's not a bargain signing. It's an excellent value signing for someone who I think is not quite Grandal, but is, you know, very comparable and an excellent piece and will fit in really well. So I was very excited.
Yeah, I'm sort of shocked that the Mets got him for this few years and this little money. Both seem below what I would have anticipated him getting. I think, you know, 3 and 30 or 35 is where I sort of saw Ramos getting signed for. So you can do 2 and 19 with a player with the team option and still only, you know, crack $26 million. That's really good, you guys. And even if he's not, even if, you know, people are getting sort of already putting him on the DL, which I understand, the guy's a bit of a history of injury, but if he can play 100 games over the 2 years of his contract, 100 games each, rather, not 50 games a year, please, not 50 games a year, but if he can play 100 games a year over the course of those 2 years, I think you're getting incredible value behind the plate for that amount of money. It's a really good signing.
Yeah, he's a legit bat. Like, I mean, he's not going to give you, he's now, I know that he looks like, if you watch the press conference, which I did not, but I have seen Wilson Ramos before, and I'm sure most Mets fans are familiar with him because he's been in division for a while. But if you've seen him, he's large. He's a large man, but he's not quite the power threat you would think for such a large man. However, he is a legit bat when healthy. He's had some like up and downs throughout his career, but on years when he's healthy, he's been like an above average bat and a way above average bat for the catching position.
Yeah, just on so, that note, Chris will be mad at me if I don't say this. Chris wanted me to say that he made Brody look like a shrimp or something. Like, he's so big that he just dwarfed Brody. So, yeah.
I think he's six. He's like 6 feet, like 230 pounds or something.
Yeah.
And it's like all muscle.
Somebody in Slack said that it'll be really interesting to see if anybody would try and charge the mound when Syndergaard's pitching and Ramos is catching, because the two of them together are like a WWF tag team. So it's
I'd love to see that. That was me.
Okay, there you go, Allison.
I was like, I just would love to see anyone try to charge the mound with Syndergaard on the mound and him. It's like, no way is that ever happening. So I think we're set.
Nice.
Wouldn't it be a little nice too? Wouldn't there be a little nice frisson of enjoyment of like, I don't know, not that we could ever guarantee he'll go reverse Daniel Murphy on the Nationals, but wouldn't it be nice to like, I don't know, have a player from a rival, and you know, maybe he'll take it to the Nationals in particular the next 2 years, and I don't know.
That would be lovely.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. That'd be great. And I think that like, somebody mentioned this on Amazing Avenue, like in the comments today, and I think it was a really good point, which was that, like, I think that people are underrating the fact that there's hidden value in the fact that he knows the NL East pitchers really well.
Yeah.
Having played many years in the NL East already, and not just the Nationals, but he knows the rest of the division pretty well, having played most of his career in the NL East. So I think that that's, you know, an advantage. That is good. That is like, that gives you extra value from the catching position more so than anywhere else, is that he knows the pitching staffs of these other teams pretty well too.
Yeah. I noticed you did what I did, Allison, and went out of your way to find a Wilson Ramos Rays photo for your article on him.
Yep. And I also, I mostly just like that it was one that he was showing off the tattoo too, though, because the Buffalo tattoo is epically good.
So let's kind of keep talking about the catching situation here for a second. It is very unlikely that the Mets carry Ramos, Travis d'Arnaud, and Kevin Plawecki going into the season. Plawecki is out of options, as is d'Arnaud, I believe. I'm not positive enough, but I believe that's the case. You know, d'Arnaud was offered was tendered a contract of was it just over $4 million, I believe.
I think
3.7.
Oh, 3.7. Okay, so it's a little bit less than that. I thought it was like 4.3, but you know, why would I look things up before a podcast? That just seems silly to me. You know,
we'll call it four.
That works for me. So you know, for about $4 million, he was tendered a contract. I believe that the Mets will be looking to either trade Plawecki or release d'Arnaud to give themselves either a chip back in a trade or a little bit more money to play with for signing a free agent or two. If you guys had to prioritize trading Plawecki or releasing d'Arnaud, I mean, or trading d'Arnaud if anybody, you know, is interested in d'Arnaud, but who would you want to see behind the backstop as the backup this coming season? Rob, let's start with you.
All right. I guess Plawecki. I mean, he just screams backup to me, like a solid backup. I like d'Arnaud, but between the question mark of the injury and, you know, the reality of the budget, like I assumed, you know, I don't know if they're, again, should have done some research before the podcast, if, you know, if they can just non-tender him now or have to wait until March or, but
I believe they have to wait until March.
Yeah, they now have to keep him until spring training, I think.
Yeah.
March, yeah.
I thought so. So, yeah, I mean, I just assumed they'd be running to you know, make sure that money's not on the books the day they could sign the Ramos contract. I was a little surprised that the early reports seemed to indicate that, you know, they'd look to keep Darnell. Now, I guess I would, you know, and again, Brody pivoted well here, it seems to me. You know, the price for Real Muto is too much. Let's sign Ramos. I would happily trade Plawecki and spend more money on the backup catcher if, you know, they can get a decent, you know, value piece for Plawecki. But, you know, I wouldn't give him away. Yeah, I don't think Darno is that much better that I'd be like, oh yeah, trade Plawecki for, you know, a bag of balls or cash considerations, because I want Darno on this roster in April. I guess it would depend on the return we can get in a potential trade for Plawecki. I assume no one's going to trade for Darno. Unless you can roll those dice and he's healthy in spring training and you can deal with it then. But I would probably lean a little towards Plawecki. But I could be convinced otherwise. So, Allison?
I don't disagree with you. So I am pretty pro Plawecki in this debate. I was kind of frustrated that they tendered Darno in the first place, to be quite honest.
Especially because it seems like they had to choose between him and Flores, and they chose Darno, which is the wrong choice every time. No offense, Travis, but it's the way it is.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And now it seems like after that kind of blurb was floated out there that the Mets might be looking to trade one of them or, you know, choose between them, basically. Like, now everybody on Mets Twitter and on Amazing Avenue and stuff is like, all right, who are they going to trade Plucky for? Let's speculate about that. And I'm like, whoa. We shouldn't get rid of Darno or be trading Plucky right now. That's not a thing we should do. I think that, like, obviously we can't carry off. I don't think that it's tenable unless you really believe that Darno is going to, like, get a first baseman's glove or something, which, like, people have been talking about, but I don't think that's really viable.
Floated as first, third, and left fielder.
I don't buy it for a second. I think that's just
Jason Phillips, anyone?
Yeah, right? Right?
The Mets. Just put him out there. He can play at left field. He'll be fine. Everything will work out just fine.
He can't even play his primary position without exploding. So, like, how is he supposed to play other positions anyway? So people are already talking about, like, potential Plawecki trades, and I'm like, I think we should probably wait until spring training to do anything, because here's the thing, here's how I see it, which is that I don't see the return for Plawecki being particularly good. If we get our minds blown, then fine. Mm-hmm. But I don't see any, like, us getting anything beyond some team's, like, retreat reliever for Plawecki in trade. And those types of relievers can be had in February and March. Like, it's not like the equivalent of that isn't going to be available to us later on. And we should probably wait this out, I think, a little bit to see if Travis is healthy. If he can, like, catch a game without his arm exploding, then maybe you can trade Plawecki. But I tend to favor just, like, holding on to Plawecki at least for a while until we figure out our situation. Because for once we have depth, and I just don't want to see, like, Tomas Nito on the team again next year. I just don't want to see it.
So it's interesting that you bring up Tomas Nito, because I was thinking about this myself today, and I was sort of weighing in my head the upside of a healthy Darno versus the reality of a dependable Plawecki, right? And what it came down to for me was, if there was a Tomas Nito plus 25% in the minor leagues, then I would trade Plawecki and roll the dice on Darno. Because if there was somebody just a little bit better than Nito in the minors, when and if Plawecki's shoulder falls off or something, I mean, not Plawecki, Darno's shoulder falls off, we can, you know, bring somebody up who's not going to be an offensive and defensive black hole for the team. I think, unfortunately, there's just no catcher in the system that is ready to be that guy yet. And so because of that, you're either going to have a healthy Ramos and Darno, which would be great, a healthy one of them, and Anito as a backup, or because both guys do have injury history, two injured catchers, and so you have then you have Anito and a Jose Lobaton type situation.
Yeah, we just watched that happen and it wasn't great.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I really don't want to put the Mets in that position. I think that Plawecki is the less sexy option because he hasn't had that Darnold offensive breakout season that he had in 2015. I don't think either is particularly great defensively or all that exciting, you know, in general, but it's a backup catcher and you could do a lot worse than Kevin Plawecki. So if possible, I would err on the side of Plawecki just because I think he's less likely to get hurt. And because of Ramos being your primary catcher, you just can't risk having both of your catchers out for any substantial period of time.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
Agree.
That said, I think that the minute the Mets get rid of Darnold, he goes to an AL team and hits 25 home runs and stays healthy.
I'm sure he will. But I don't know. Like you gotta cut him loose at some point. Like he's gotten quite a fair amount of chances at this point. Like, at what point do you let go?
We'll always have the Band-Aid on top of the apple.
Yes.
Yep.
That was his best moment as a Met for sure. Yeah.
And, you know,
that was good.
The other thing is you have to, you know, talking about giving him chances, Allison, if he played any other position, he'd be gonzo. Like there's no way he's still there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why they kept him over Flores, I would imagine. Right.
Right.
You know.
And honestly, I think people yes, we agree that Kevin Plawecki is not a sexy option, but I think that people actually underrate his bat a little bit when talking about catchers. Like, I don't think people really understand how bad catchers suck at hitting.
Yeah.
Like across the whole league. Like Kevin Plawecki is roughly a league average hitter, which is actually above average for a catcher.
Right.
Like he's a roughly 95 WRC plus ish hitter, and that's fine for a catcher. Whereas I don't know if you guys remember, small sample size alert, but Tomas Nito was a 20 WRC plus hitter. 20. That's not a small potatoes difference. And I get that Nito is more defensively oriented, but 20 doesn't play at the major league level. That's just not a major league player. I'm sorry. And maybe he is and I think that Nito could develop into I'm not out on Nito completely. I think he could develop into maybe an 80 WRC plus hitter, and maybe for his defense at the catching position that plays.
Right.
But I think he needs another year in the minors for that. And we need two catchers now. So
yeah, that is a small but painful sample size.
Yes,
yes, very painful.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. Also, I think I did the Plawecki season recap, and yeah, I think he's a very serviceable backup. He has some just useful tools that play well.
Whose personal catcher did he become this season? Was it Syndergaard's?
I thought that Syndergaard liked Lobaton.
No,
actually,
that's who it was. Yeah, yeah. That's what I was confusing my shitty catcher. Sorry. and ultimately, this is one of those things that makes for good podcast fodder today. But ultimately, I don't think the backup catcher is going to be the story of the 2019 Mets. I think if everything goes if everything goes well, this will be a relatively moot point. But I do think that one of the things, Rob, you mentioned, just the relief of Brody not trading off a big player for Real Muto. One of the things that Brody said today in the presser was that, or maybe he said this afterwards in one of the interviews, was that the Syndergaard rumor was never really a thing, but that his open-mindedness led people to, report things that weren't very serious but were discussed because he's open to discussing them. And I feel like catcher is the one position in baseball that nobody is open-minded about. There's still this very traditionalist view of what a catcher's role is. And
yeah.
I would really like somebody, it's not going to be Van Wagenen, it doesn't appear, but to just sort of chip away at that a little bit. I'm not saying I have the solution here. I just think that there needs to be some conversation about catching and either a way to improve some catcher offense or some, you know, finding the inefficiency in catching and exploiting it somehow. Because, I mean, have you guys looked at like a list of catching offensive performances for 2018?
It's bad.
It's a graveyard.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's really bad. And I don't know what the answer is, but I'm hoping that the open-mindedness of Van Wagenen can maybe begin to chip away at that a bit.
Yeah. I think that, like, when it comes to the catching position and the future of, like, how I see the game going with this, I think a lot of it has to do with the increased emphasis on framing and how, like, we didn't realize how important it was before. And so now, like, catchers that are good at framing, like, that can really change the course of a game. And so we're so much less focused on whether they can hit and a lot more focused on whether they can frame pitches. And I think that a lot of these, like, big lumbering dudes that like tend to be catchers when they're young get moved off that position now very quickly, and like the catcher is becoming a different physical type, yeah. If that makes sense. So actually the Ramoses of the world aren't really becoming catchers anymore, right. They're like becoming like first baseman and DHs, yeah. And yeah. Stuff. So like I think that like that is happening a lot more now, so I think that has to do with in part why catching offense is such a graveyard, because catching defense and framing mostly has become more emphasized.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, having, you know, an athletic catcher like Real Muto, I mean, it is exciting. I get the appeal. You know, I think all of us are, you know, our reluctance to that trade was not about that player. It was about, you know, what we would be sacrificing to acquire that player. But I certainly, you know, he seems to kind of check all the boxes. I don't think quite as, you know, far above and beyond Grandal as, you know, some people would have. But, yeah, I mean, it is an interesting, like, maybe he is kind of a prototypical, as you're saying, Allison, newer catcher, you know, that is more athletic and nimble, you know, for as long as you can be doing that position. I don't know. Yeah.
And I think that, what Brody Van Wagenen was saying in the presser and what he's been saying lately, actually, like, it gives me, this Ramos signing in general and the way he's, like, talked about it gives me, like, a huge boost of confidence in him, like, as general manager, that I'm now, like, fully, like, on board with him as general manager. Because, like, before it was like, oh no, is he just going after his guy again, like he did with Cano? Is it just the CAA guy thing, and he's going to do whatever it takes to get this trade through? And he knew when to walk away and take the other guy instead, and that gave me a huge boost of confidence in his ability to see things objectively and, you know, like, execute these moves in a smart way. And that made me feel a lot better.
No, I could not agree more. Like, I kind of left between the first trade and what was proposed, I was just like, I don't know about this.
Rob, I have a question for you, because we haven't talked on the podcast since that first trade happened. Is Kelenic the piece that got you down on that trade?
A little bit. I could be way off, and like I came around a little bit, like reading and hearing everyone's thoughts on AA. Kelenic in particular, yeah, and he could be last things millage or he could be Mike Trout someday. It's irrelevant to me. It just reminded me a lot of Scott Kazmir. I mean, Edwin Diaz is incredible, but like the Cano, to me, the Cano taking on that contract should have been the part and parts should have been the freight, the cost. I thought we, in my mind, we're giving up a lot. Someone who had a lot of value. I don't know what Kelenic's going to become, but like, I was, you know, if we traded him in a trade for Kluber, Goldschmidt, or Real Muto, if he was part of that package, I would have driven him to the airport and been like, wow. I was just not too enthused about Robinson Cano and that contract. So I, in my mind, I, and I'm not a GM and I could be way off about this, I would have played hardball and been like, you want us to take Cano? We want Diaz. You'll get middling prospects, like, you know, someone in the bottom of our top 10. If the Phillies or whoever are willing to give you a couple of great prospects for, you know, to take on Cano and to, you know, acquire Diaz, go for it. You know, call, I'm calling your bluff. That was kind of my take on it a little bit. So yeah, I mean, Kelenic definitely more than done. I felt like he's only going to increase as an asset at least for another year or two. I don't know what he's going to become. I don't like to get that tied up on a prospect. I just kind of thought it was a lot for taking on Cano as well as Diaz. Although I admit I'm very excited about Diaz, and you know, I feel a little bit better about it now as the team's coming together. I just still feel like, yeah, I'm probably wrong about that in retrospect.
I think that's a fair analysis of the trade. I think that, you know, it's hard. I could definitely see your side in it. But here's the question I was going to ask, and this is probably a really dumb way to look at the offseason, but I'm prepared to look dumb in the pursuit of good podcast conversation. So let's presume for a second that if the Mets make another trade this offseason, that it's one that does not impact the long-term prospect of the farm system. So, you know, they're giving up a couple of decent prospects, but no one special for a reliever, or they flip Plaw for a reliever or something like that. Do you think at the end of the offseason, in the direction the Mets are going right now, the ability to add all the players that they have added, whether, you know, Cano, Diaz, now Familia, Ramos, and we'll talk about a few more in a minute. Is the cost of Kelenic and Dunn excessive? Like, for looking at the offseason as a whole, have the Mets given up too much from their farm system to get the caliber of player back that they got? Are you still going to feel that they overpaid if they do add another bullpen arm or two and an outfielder? And I know that it's not apples to apples here, but just in terms of the amount they got back versus the amount they gave up, will you still feel that there's an imbalance there?
I think I'll always look at the, and again, like I said, as Allison kind of, as she indicated, like feeling better about Brody, like, you know, that he stepped away from this, maybe I'm wrong. And like, this was a total fair package. Like, I guess I'll always wonder, like, could we have gotten them for less? I mean, obviously, particularly if we took on more of the contract, but I know that probably wasn't going to happen. Could we have gotten him for a little less? And then, yeah, like, we need, you know, we need a piece in the middle of the season. Like, you know, maybe the Rockies have a crap year and they decide we're going to trade Nolan Arenado. Could we have built a pro? We don't have a deep, deep farm system. So I just think you have to hold those chips to, like, and again, I'm probably not giving Diaz his fair. I'm very excited about having him. It felt like a high price. You know, but your point, if the team looks great, you know, on paper going into 2019, and it seems like it's starting to take shape in a nice way, I mean, if they're competing for the playoffs, I'm really not going to care that much.
Because, you know, one of the things I was thinking about was just that the value they got in Ramos, I don't want to say it changes the way I look at that trade, because it really doesn't, but I think we were under the impression that they were going to make a dumb trade for Real Muto, and mm-hmm. then you're getting worried. Because then you're saying, mm-hmm. okay, not only have we depleted our top offensive prospect, or at least, or maybe our second, you know, our number two offensive prospect behind Jimenez, if you're really a believer in Jimenez, but, you know, then you're also giving up some of your young major league, already major league successful talent, and then you're really carving out a gap between your lower level talent and your older players, and there's no one in that middle of the sandwich. All you're left with is the bread on either end. But I think that because they got Ramos at a reasonable deal, I think the Familia deal was pretty reasonable dollar wise also. So when you look at it, like they've gotten back, I think, more value than I expected them to get for what they've put out so far.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. And yeah, I definitely feel a little bit better. You know, I Kano has an amazing year. You know, it'll shut me right up, I'm sure. You know, I keep having visions of him having two horrible years, and then we cut him, and then he signs for the league minimum for the Yankees and hits 40 homers over there in a couple of years. But I'm gonna assume, that was the part. Like, I just didn't. And when I looked at the lineup, when I put, did like the lineup with Ramos in, I was just like, wow, that's a pretty good lineup. I mean, that's not bad right now. So, I guess I just, when I, in a vacuum, I was like, Jeff McNeil looked really good. Where are we playing Robinson Cano? Why are we, I don't want to, I'm really being incredibly unfair to Robinson Cano, but I think I looked at it as like, we don't need him, we need Edwin Diaz, but we're giving up a lot for taking on Cano's contract. Like, I guess I'll always wonder, what if we still had those chips in July that we didn't spend them there? Could we have held on to them? And could we have made a huge acquisition if this team does perform well in the first half of the year? So I think it'll always be in my mind, but believe me, come the thaw in March, I'll be excited to the way the team's starting to shape up. I think I'll be excited to go out there to Citi Field.
Well,
that's a fair point about holding your chips, though. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I hadn't really thought about it that way before. But it's the way I see it is, this is for sure a win now move. What they did, that trade's a win now move. It's banking on Cano being good for one or two more years and knowing that it's going to suck on the back end, but we get this elite reliever out of it too. But to me, the trade is, like Brian said, the trade is only good in, I think the trade is good, but I think it's only good in the greater context of the whole offseason, and it's only good if they do what they have to do to win now, because you've done this win now trade now. Now you got to go really go in for it. So sign Bryce Harper.
Segway.
Well, let's talk about Bryce Harper for a minute. So I think we can probably estimate that Bryce Harper is going to make a minimum of $30 million this upcoming season, correct?
$300 million? Yeah, probably.
I would guess, 30 at least, maybe more if he did take a shorter term deal, if it turned into something like that or with an out. But yeah, I would assume that's the ballpark.
So let's assume $30 million. First of all, is there any world in which the Mets spend $30 million on Bryce Harper?
Absolutely not.
Okay. That said, they should.
Yes.
To be fair, he is not a perfect fit on this team. This is a team, I was thinking about this earlier today. This is a team that by the middle of June, no, let's call it the middle of July. Let's pretend Cespedes is back. If Cespedes comes back in the middle of July, and I know that's a big presumption, their Mets are going to have something like 5 outfielders and 6 infielders who should be playing every day. Because this is an oddly constructed roster, right? You're gonna have Alonso up at that point, hopefully, Cano, Rosario, Frazier, my boy McNeil. You got Nimmo, Conforto, insert center fielder they're supposedly going after here, Cespedes, and depending on his health, Juan Lagares. So, that's a lot of infielders and a lot of outfielders to find playing time for. I just don't know how Bryce Harper easily slots in there. You're going to have to really remake the look of the team if you had Bryce Harper. But you'd have Bryce Harper, and so you'd be more than willing to remake the team however you need to.
You move whoever you need to move wherever on the field to make Bryce Harper fit on this team.
Yeah, these problems you're discussing, Brian, are problems I am not familiar with as a Met fan.
And I recognize...
And I'd love to have those problems.
And I recognize injuries will decimate this team and leave me crying in a puddle, and this is not going to be a reality, but, you know... But I understand why, you know, I think so many times we think of baseball like it's fantasy baseball, because that's the closest a lot of us schmucks have ever gotten to actually, you know, assembling a roster of some sort. And if you're looking at the Mets roster right now and you need a center fielder for your team, you're not signing Bryce Harper because he's not going to get those reps in center field, most likely.
Yeah. I mean, my galaxy brain way of viewing this is that, like, You want to hedge your bets against Alonso being not immediately awesome. And so I think that there is room for Cespedes or Harper, if Cespedes is back and healthy, for one of those two to take first base reps. That's my galaxy brain idea of how that works.
Okay. I like that. Yeah, I mean...
Cespedes needs to save his legs. Maybe he plays a little first base.
Yeah, that works.
That just stinks a little too much of Terry Collins for me, but I appreciate the thought.
I'm trying to make a world where Bryce Harper and Yoenis Cespedes are on the same team and we don't lose Nimmo and Conforto's playing time, okay? I'm trying real hard.
I appreciate the effort. I do.
That is some gymnastics, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it feels very Steinbrenner-esque, but, like, yeah, I mean, I think I would still, you know, The only when we were talking about the Real Muto trade before, the only way I would have been okay with it is if it was Ahmed Rosario and that day they announced they were signing Manny Machado. But I know we're
not. Oh, yeah. Then it's fine.
But because that would have been a perfect fit. I just think I would still be like, you know what, let's sign Bryce Harper and these other smaller problems will work themselves out somewhere else. We have Bryce Harper now. I mean, yeah, it's three left-handed outfielders, none of whom are ideal at center field, although I think you could get by with Nimmo.
Yeah, I think Nimmo's fine.
So. I don't know. I think, and this is probably why I'm not a general manager, I think I would just be like, fuck it, let's do it, and let's worry about, you know, the semantics of who's playing where, you know, later.
I mean, you hope that the Mets are not so pedantic in their thought that they would only sign a center fielder at this point. Because I think to a certain degree you have to treat every offseason like the NFL draft, where you take the best player available.
Agree.
You know, and you just need to make those things work, because let's be fair, if there's ever a time to get Machado or Harper in a Mets uniform, it's right now. You know, yes, there could be a Robinson Cano situation where they sign someplace, it's a terrible fit for them, and they need to get out of there, and so the Mets can sort of step backwards into one of those players. You can't bank on that. If you want one of those players to be on the Mets, now is the time to do that. Imperfect fit as it is, you sort of have to go for it. And I'm not... Yep. I am not saying the Mets need to sign every big free agent in every offseason going forward. But Chris wrote a really good piece today. If you guys haven't checked it out, go to AmazingAvenue.com. Check out the piece by Chris McShane about why this is the perfect time for the Mets to add a big bat. Just like looking at payroll considerations for the next couple of years, you know, with these couple of new signings, we finally have money on the books past 2020. But before the Cano trade, there was literally zero guaranteed money on the table after 2020.
To me it seems to make too much sense, like, to sign Machado or Harper. Like, all I keep thinking to myself is Piazza, and, like, you know, I don't like to, you know, the idea of, like, oh, you need a big name in New York, you need to compete with the Yankees, you need to do this. However, I mean, they're the right players. They're 26. You know, again, like, that was also unfairly to Cano. I was like, oh, great, we get the 36-year-old former star, right, not the 26-year-old real star. You know, like, I just think, yeah, anyone, you know, people who are looking for these problems about, like, hey, there are always another left-handed hitter, or, you know, Machado is a quote-unquote problem or doesn't hustle. It's like these players come up once in a generation, usually to trade, all your Kalenics and all of your Vientoses for. They're there just to ink a contract with money and be a cornerstone and, like, you know, be a six war player for at least 5 years, probably. And yeah, and be in New York and be one of the most marketable players in baseball. And it just seems stupid that it's not, it just seems ridiculous that it's not even a consideration.
Yep. I have nothing to add. That's, yep, 100%. It's frustrating. It's frustrating, but you know, I think we've said some variant of this on this podcast many times. They can build a playoff contending team if they want to without Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. But why would you do that when it's so much easier to just sign Bryce Harper or Manny Machado? That instantly makes this team, right, which right now I think is, like, you know, on paper at least, we obviously have no idea what's going to happen. That's why you play the baseball games. But on paper is like hovering on the edges of contention, I would say. Like, this roster as currently constructed is like maybe a low 80s win roster. So just sign Manny Machado and you're over 90 wins now. Yay. Easy. Done. You don't need to do anything else. You can still have your crap fantastic bullpen aside from Familia and Diaz, you could still have your craptastic bullpen and probably still make the playoffs.
Hey, Seth Lugo's fine.
Seth Lugo's fine. Okay, sorry. Sorry, Seth Lugo. Apologies. I like there Seth Lugo.
Multiple ways to win. You know, you're not the best bullpen in the world, but we can tack on runs in late in the game too. You know, we can with a lot of. And also, it wouldn't just be for this year. I mean, you're talking about, you know, everyone talks about the window with our, you know, young starters. And, like, to me, like, we're trying to build a contender right now just for this year, whereas signing a Harper Machado is, I think, gives you, like, a three-year window, or at least, you know, depending on if they extend our beloved pitchers, you know, where you almost would expect to make the playoffs just with that, if you supplement that core adequately.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just think about all the at-bats that Jose Reyes got in 2018 and imagine those going to Manny Machado.
Oh my God. Don't play with my emotions. the 2018 Jose Reyes at-bats, like, I think even the roster as it is right now, it is nice to think about how those at-bats that went to, like, Adrian Gonzalez and Jose Reyes, like, those are already gone. Mm. Like, even as the roster stands, because those type of at-bats are going to, like, Jeff McNeil instead, yes, which is cool.
Yes.
Yes.
And actually, I think that, and this...
And Peter Alonso.
Yes. This will dovetail nicely into our next bullet point here, but I think that one of the things I was so excited about at the start of last season, and I wouldn't shut the fuck up about it, was how deep the Mets bench appeared to be. And then that crumbled like a house of cards, right?
But, accurate, so who knows what will happen.
But when you look at the Mets bench this year, it looks relatively strong again. You know, if McNeil is the super sub playing all around the infield, that's a hell of a super sub to have. You know, I think we're all hoping that, you know, maybe if Frazier has a good first half, he goes bye-bye and McNeil becomes the everyday third baseman without reservation. But even until then, McNeil as a one-year super sub is a really useful player. The Mets did not have anyone that promising on the bench until McNeil was called up last season.
Yeah, yep. No, I mean, if they found a way to get him 500 at bats in a Zobristian way, you know, more power.
Zobristian, well played.
Zobristian is a good word. And, like, I feel like that's like an alien race in, like, a sci-fi movie.
Absolutely, yes.
But I agree. And I think that there's like a pretty high probability that he gets 450 at bats, some odd, because think about how many at bats Wilmer Flores got every year. That's the Jeff McNeil now. So, you know, injuries are going to happen. Jeff McNeil's going to get his at-bats. Like, yeah, is it frustrating that they're probably going to start Frazier over him? Yeah, it's frustrating. But I'm not super bent out of shape about it because I think that there's a high probability he gets at-bats somewhere. Yes. Because someone's going to get hurt. Or, you know, just as a fixture of, like, resting guys all the time, he's going to wear an outfielder's glove occasionally, perhaps, and, like, you know, go be Ben Zobrist. So I think it's fine. It's fine. And I think the probability, I mean, I still think this doesn't justify starting him over Jeff McNeil, but I think the probability that Todd Frazier has a better year than he had last year is sufficiently high.
Yes, agreed.
Agreed. I just have enough, you know, encouragement and faith in McNeil that I think he'll force his way in there. I think, like, even if he's not in the opening day lineup, like, he's going to get in games and he's going to do things, and it's going to be like, we have to find a way to play him more often and get him more at bats.
I mean, that's essentially what Brandon Nimmo did. Like, he basically made himself unbenchable. Mm. And I'm hoping that Jeff McNeil does the same thing.
Yeah. But so, you know, we've talked a lot about sort of some big ticket free agent signings and all that, but the Mets are quietly sort of filling out their roster with a couple of minor league moves. Today they signed Zach Lee.